Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Kiva. Today is Tuesday, November 14th, and it's actually my Hebrew birthday today, Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Let this month bring us a lot of simcha and happiness, and it's also the rally in DC today. So again, I just want to start the episode with remembering what's going on in Israel and davening for all the soldiers to be safe, all of Israel to be safe, all of the Jews to be safe, and please, 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 Hashem, bring back all of the hostages safe, unharmed, in body and soul. Okay, today I interviewed Esther Shem Tov, so if you follow my status on WhatsApp, you'll see that she actually interviewed me a few weeks ago on her podcast called On Your Own, which I just love the concept that the specific niche that really speaks to her are girls who are living away from home for the first time, hence the name On Your Own. And somebody gave her my number just because she was starting her own podcast and looking for professionals to interview. And when she reached out, I said, by the way, just so you know, I also happen to have not lived at home since I was 13 because I boarded for high school. So it was just like a match made in heaven, I guess. So she interviewed me and I had her come on, and we specifically covered the fact that once you live away from home, especially when you're younger, food always becomes some sort of an, I don't want to say issue, quote unquote, but an issue, quote unquote, because like everything changes when you move away from home because you're just not used to eating in someone else's house or in a dorm, or you have less control over your food because like it's whatever they serve, or maybe you're a little shy, you don't want to ask your boarding parents, or there's so many reasons, and just that first time being on your own and having to navigate food could be really stressful, and it could lead to food issues, and it could also not lead to food issues. But I guess the purpose of the podcast is to give you guys that insight and the tools. Let's say you are on your own for the first time, or you have a child that's on their own for the first time, just to be aware of the things that could potentially come up. I thought it was a great episode. I will air the episode that I did with her on her podcast as well, but now I'm putting out the podcast that we did together. And please make sure to subscribe and share the podcast. It really, really helps people find the podcast, people find intuitive eating information. It's so important. I really think that we're making a difference in the world by spreading this information. And if you'd like to sign up to work with me one-on-one, you could email me at kivaglassberg18@gmail.com, or you could WhatsApp me at 570-878-3642. As always, I'm looking for any podcast guests, any recommendations, all comments welcome. You can email me again at kivaglassberg18@gmail.com. And if you are looking to work in a group setting, I am recruiting for a group now. So we work together on Zoom. We meet once a week. Everything's recorded and you have unlimited access to those recordings. So that way you could continue to review all the intuitive eating information that you learn in the group. So it acts as a way to learn about intuitive eating, but also get support from people who are also on that journey. Okay, without further ado, here is Esther Shem Tov.
Hi everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Get Into It with Gila.
I know you're going to love the content here because you will gain inspiration, powerful tools and insights, and valuable knowledge. If you want more of this, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com or visit me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. I'm Gila Glassberg, a registered dietitian and intuitive eating counselor. I have come to realize by counseling many, many women that this work is much deeper and greater than food and body image. It's the bigger picture challenges we face of love, belonging, acceptance, what our true values and goals are, noticing them, addressing them, and gaining skills to move forward. If you have been struggling with what your life's purpose is, or you just feel stuck in general and don't know what's holding you back, this podcast will enlighten and inspire you to take action and move forward. This podcast is about other women in the 21st century who feel that losing weight will fix all their problems or somehow meet their unmet needs.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Gila. I'm Gila Glassberg, your host, registered dietitian, and certified intuitive eating counselor. And today I have Esther Shem Tov. Hi, Esther.
Hi, Gila.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Of course. Yes, so good to see you. So, Esther, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live and what do you do?
I live in Yerushalayim. I'm originally from South Africa. You're trying to pin the accent.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Yeah. It's a bit of a mix these days.
Yeah.
But I've been here for, this is my 10th year in Israel. Came here for high school and never left. So I
Wow.
live here with my husband and two kids.
Wow.
And I teach every day in a seminary called Ma'anot, teach Hasidus. And I just started the On Your Own podcast for Jewish girls who
Yes.
are living away from home, which is really exciting, where I had you on. That was a lot of fun.
Yes. I want to talk about that. It
And
was so fun.
yeah. And I do different kind of workshops in different seminaries on topics like health and intuition and all that fun stuff. So
Amazing.
that's, yeah.
That is really fun. So before we get started, just how do you feel living in Yerushalayim right now? Do you feel safer? Do you feel scared? What's the atmosphere like there during the war?
For me right now, it feels almost totally back to normal. I'm very privileged though. Baruch Hashem, we both, my husband and I, still have our jobs fully, and my kids are back in school now. It took a while, but they're fully back in school. So I have to speak to my for myself though. I know a lot of people have had their hours cut at work, or have lost jobs, or their businesses are doing really badly. So financially, there's a lot of struggle. These things hit Israel hard because obviously it's a very tough market here, just making a living in general. And then in terms of safety, I feel safe. I do. There are those who still feel pretty traumatized, but Baruch Hashem personally feels safe to go around wherever I need to go. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. So I know you have your own podcast. I was actually on your podcast called On Your Own, right? On your own. So a
Yeah.
little bit of your story is that you moved out of your house when you were young, like in high school. So could you share a little bit about that, like that experience?
Sure. So I grew up in Johannesburg, which has a big frum community. So I always had a frum school. But then my parents moved to Cape Town when I was 11, and it's a much smaller frum community. And there was no frum high school. Since then, my parents have, Baruch Hashem, started a beautiful high school.
Oh,
But
wow.
I needed to leave. There wasn't anybody in my class. So we decided I was going to go to Israel. I was 15, starting 10th grade.
Oh my gosh.
There was a dorm in Tzfas that there's a Nale program that takes kids from outside of Israel and kind of like pays your tuition and all that. So we thought, let's give it a shot. So I went to Israel. It's a fully Hebrew speaking high school. I didn't speak a word of Hebrew.
Wow.
There were a few other girls my age. There were a few other girls who were American.
You're
Who
not
were my age? The
American.
rest were is so yeah. I'm not American, but in Israel, if you're not from Israel, you're called American. It's just how it goes. It's very
It's
annoying.
like you're out of town if you live out anywhere outside of New York. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, out of town is exactly so. Out of Israelis are all
Yeah.
Americans.
Got it.
So yeah, so that's where I spent 3 years. I was in Tzfas. It was very hard. Also, just the hashkafa was way more strict than what I was used to at home. A lot of rules, a lot of restrictions. So that was tough, but it was also very good for me. I'm very glad I did it. Built a lot of independence.
For sure.
Yeah, so that so my if do you want to get into like the eating part of it now? Because
Not
that was
yet.
a big
Actually, not
thing
yet. I
here.
want to
So
ask you a few more
okay.
questions. Are you the oldest?
I'm the oldest. Yes, I'm
You
the
were the
guinea pig for
first. Yeah,
everything.
of course. Yeah.
Yeah, like my parents didn't send anyone else to Israel. Like they would never do that.
Right. Only you.
after
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah, I'm the oldest.
How many siblings do you have?
Six. I'm the oldest of seven.
Oh,
We're
kind of
six
hard.
girls and one boy. Yeah.
Wow. Is he like the middle, youngest? Is he like,
He's the middle.
he's the middle, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so after that, your parents decided not to send anyone away because did they feel
No,
like.
they did send them away, just not to Israel, not to a fully Hebrew speaking dormitory with lots of strict frumkeit rules.
Right.
My sister went to live in London for 3 years with my grandparents,
Oh, wow.
and my brother actually did go to Israel for yeshiva for 2 years. He did actually go to Israel, but it was a very different, it was fully American yeshiva
Right.
there,
Right.
also in Tzfas. Yeah.
Right. That must have been really hard. Like I as I mentioned when you interviewed me, like I moved from Scranton to New Jersey to Teaneck, New Jersey, which was only a few hours away. But you moved to a whole different country. So Were you like willing to go? Were you afraid? Were you like a happy-go-lucky type of 10th grader that you didn't really think about it?
I was actually very excited. I was afraid, but I didn't let myself admit it. And I was that kind of kid.
Tough, very
I've got
stubborn,
it all
tough.
together. Yeah. Like I had to show that I had it all together, even to myself. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do this. It was the beginning was very hard with the language. I mean, there's leaving home and then there's walking into a classroom where you have no idea what the teacher's saying and you have no idea what the girls are saying. Like I got zeros on my tests. Like I'd been a top student and then I got a test back with zero. I was like, what? So that was definitely difficult, but I was very like tough about it, if that makes sense. I didn't really admit it. Yeah.
Like you just had like a strong friend.
And also I was very close with my parents. I still am. I spoke to them probably every day for those 3 years. At least one of them every single day. So I did have a lot of support from them, even though I was far away. Yeah.
Was there at any point where you were considering going back or no?
Yeah, all
Oh,
the time. Yeah, because I'd have friends be like, we're all leaving. So I'm like, oh my gosh, everyone's going. I need to go home. But never actually seriously.
So eventually it sounds like you ended up really enjoying it.
Yeah, I made some very close friends. They became like my family. And I learned Hebrew, so I started doing very well in school.
When did you pick up Hebrew? How long did
Yeah.
it take?
11th grade. 11th grade, I picked it up. By the end of 11th grade, I was fluent.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that's still 2 years, 10th and 11th grade.
Yeah. I always say by Chanukah of the first year, the words stopped being like one long word, and I started to be like, okay, these differences. By Pesach, the understanding got a little better. And then by 11th grade, I started actually speaking more. It was definitely a process.
So now you're
We had
fluent in Hebrew.
now, yeah. We also had like 10 hours a week of Ulpan for
Oh,
the,
for the
and I was naughty,
Americans.
so I actually listened in Ulpan. Yeah, now I'm married to someone from Israel whose family is Israeli, so my Hebrew, yeah, it's pretty good.
So you said you never left. So you stayed there and then you went to seminary there and then you got married and stayed.
Yeah. I went to seminary in Yerushalayim. So it was 3 years in Tzfas, then a year in Yerushalayim. And then I went back to Tzfas for like a Shana Bet kind of shlichus slash learning year.
You're
And I
Chabad?
got
Are you
engaged that
Chabad?
year. Yeah, I'm Chabad.
I
Yeah.
didn't know that. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
You got
So,
engaged your
yeah.
Shana Bet.
Yeah. I was very young. It was very unexpected. I wasn't in the dating scene at all, but it just came up and we were like, okay. So I went out and I got engaged.
Wow,
And he
that's like
was from
everyone's
Israel. So,
dream. Yeah.
yeah.
Like
Yeah.
I wasn't dating, but someone just suggested someone out of the blue and it just worked, you know?
Yeah. Baruch Hashem.
So did you when you were in your Shana Bet and then you ended up starting to date and then got engaged, was it always like your hope to stay in Israel? Like was it always
No,
no?
actually, I never. Israel kind of just happened for me. It was so interesting. I never liked Israel as a kid. I went to Israel when I was 11 for the first time, and we were here over Sukkot during a crazy heat wave, and I was like, I hate this place. Like, that was my kids' like version of Israel. And then it just happened to be the high school was in Israel, and then the seminary was in Israel. And like it's interesting. I don't have like this deep kind of, I mean, every yid loves Eretz Yisrael, but like not in a personal kind of I love Israel way. And now we live here because of Chabad, so because of Shlichus. So yeah, I mean it's grown on me for sure, but it was never like my top destination place, you know?
It's so funny. We have so many similarities because I never thought I would live in Woodmere of all places in the entire world. Because as you know, I'm a major out of towner, like major. Like Scranton's not like Cleveland. Scranton's like tiny, 200 families, maybe, probably not now. And it was always I actually like lived in Teaneck for high school, which is pretty in town. You know, it's New Jersey, whatever. But like, I still always considered myself an out of towner, and I always said I'm gonna move out of town. And when we got engaged, my husband was in Ner Yisrael in Baltimore, and that was like the plan. And then we just ended up staying in New York, and then we ended up buying a house in New York. And there was so many other out of town things that came up that just didn't work out. And it was like Hashem puts you where you're meant to be. And it's so, like, people always say, what of all people, you live in the five towns? I don't even live like on the outskirts of like the in townness. I live like in the in town. But the five towns is really nice, I have to say.
Yeah,
Don't,
your
you
shalom's
know.
pretty good too. I'm not
Yeah.
complaining.
No, it
Sometimes
taught
the
me a
place chooses
lesson.
you.
It taught me a lesson that, like, I just branded like everyone who's from the five towns is like, you know, Jappy or whatever, but like that's not true. And like, even if people are Jappy, they could still be really nice. So I learned that lesson, you know?
Good lesson.
Yeah. So, we spoke a little bit about this like via texting, and you had me on your podcast, but like, I know that you started a podcast specifically for girls who moved away from home when they were young. And one of the big things that comes up is food, right? Because we have to eat every day, multiple times a day, and that's like a big part of like being taken care of as a teen. You know, our parents usually cook for us, shop for us, know what we like, know what we don't like, and that's like totally not a thing when you don't live at home. So what was your journey like in terms of your relationship with food?
Yeah, so actually pretty similar to how you described yours in a lot of ways. So it started before I left home. Not in any sort of extreme way, but I started becoming conscious of food and my weight, you know, around when I hit puberty and my body changed. So but it wasn't anything ever very obsessive until I left home. As I mentioned, I wasn't one to admit that I was afraid or that I felt alone or scared or any of that. So a lot of my anxiety of being on my own manifested into food and the anxiety of gaining weight. So people said, you're going to Israel, not for 1 year of saying for 3 years, you're going to get so fat. So I was like, oh my goodness, I'm not going to do that. So I promised
Interesting.
myself that I'm not going to do that. So the first year I left home, I did pretty much the typical dieting stuff, you know, what a 15-year-old understands about what it means to lose weight. And it was more like typical dieting slash maybe a little bit extreme to some points. But it was very clear, like, my intention is to not lose weight.
Your
But
intention
I ended
is to
up,
lose weight or not lose weight?
sorry, my intention is to not gain weight, is to
Got it.
lose weight.
Yeah.
First it was to not gain weight, then I gained weight, so it was to lose weight.
Yes.
So it didn't end up working, actually. I ended up gaining a lot of, I don't know, remember now. Objectively, probably not a lot of weight, but it felt like a ton of weight.
Right.
And so I had this whole shift. Okay, I'm not dieting. I think you mentioned that you had this as well. Dieting doesn't work. I'm going to be healthy. I care about my health. And so from 11th grade, I became a health freak. What we call today orthorexia. I definitely ticked all the boxes. It got pretty extreme in 11th grade. Like, my hair started falling out. I didn't think of anything. I thought of other things, but any free time I had, I was thinking about food. I would cook all my own kind of concoctions. I had access to this little kitchen. 11th grade, I got very extreme. It was a very hard year in general for just all my friends were going through different things. And so for me, it was food. And then 12th grade, I kind of, I would say, balanced out, as in I wasn't starving myself to the extreme that I was before, but I was still extremely, extremely careful with what I ate. I was everybody's food police. Everybody praised me, literally
Yeah,
everybody. I would
I was
get
gonna ask
my
you that.
teachers.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, there was so much praise. Yeah, I became the healthy girl of the, it was in a dorm of like 100 girls, and I was known. I'm the healthy girl. I run. I've got it together with my health when nobody else does. That became my identity. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so similar to my story.
Yeah.
So do you think now that you like you know, you're looking back on it, that there's probably a lot of layers, but one of the layers is maybe that because you didn't have your parents to like, maybe there was like a void, like you didn't have your family, that like food was like that comfort for you?
I don't think that it was a comfort thing. I think it was a control thing. I felt so out of control of my life in so many ways. Being thrown into a whole new environment that I had so little control over, that I think food and my weight and my body became an opportunity to just exercise control. So I thought, until it started controlling me, but I didn't see it that way. Yeah.
And the praise that you got, do you think that was, you were just like, you needed, or were you the type of kid that needed a lot of external validation, or that just was a byproduct?
Think it was a byproduct. A lot of it, I think I wasn't giving myself enough validation, as in I thought that my whole worth depended on being skinny. So to be able to hear it from other people was always nice, but it was never actually enough, because even if people told me I was skinny, I kind of didn't believe them until I believed I told myself I was skinny. So the praise wasn't even what I was after. It was, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And the not eating enough, how did that affect you in other ways? Like you said, you were thinking about food a lot, but were you like, was it hard to
Yeah,
concentrate and
I didn't get my period for 4 years, so that's a big thing. Very lucky that Baruch Hashem, I started like eating better, and it came back really quickly. It was a big bracha. But for 4 years, I didn't get a period. I used to go to gynecologists, and they would be like, "Oh, like take this pamphlet for PCOS." I'm like, "Okay, I'll read it." And I was like, "I definitely don't have, like, I don't have any of these symptoms except that I don't have a period." Nobody thought to ask me if I drastically lost weight recently. Nobody thought to ask me what my eating was like. It's almost like ridiculous looking back. But yeah, I was going from doctor to doctor, like, why don't I have a period?
So you didn't ever think that it had to do with the way you were eating?
Never put it together. And then I stopped exercising as much, and I started eating more with my like intuitive eating kind of journey. And within 2 months, I got my period back. Yeah.
Yeah, it goes to show, that you walk into a doctor's office, and if you're in this type of body, it's like you're healthy no matter what. It's not the way you're
Yeah.
eating. If you're in this
It
type
was
of
never
body,
questioned.
yeah.
Yeah.
And another thing I wanted to ask you, just your analysis of this, why do you think from people like you were in Tzfas, you were in a totally spiritual, uplifted place. Why is it so important to be skinny? How did this become such a value in our Jewish life? What do you think?
So, to be fair, I didn't get so many praises about being skinny. It was more about my pursuit of health that was praised. I wouldn't even admit to myself that the only reason I was caring so much about health was to be skinny. What I told everyone was, I care so much about my health and the world's health, and I was praised for that, for the running and the smoothies and all of that. Definitely, I mean, they're probably, yeah, so it wasn't overtly for weight, but I mean, even people in Tzfas are no, they're normal people, especially I was living in the area, not the old city where it's like more, I was living in a typical kind of Chabad community there. And it's an interesting one, because you would think that we care more about the neshama, and I think a lot of it, a lot of the praise that I heard was kind of like, good job that you've kind of got your life together.
I know, it's
A lot
funny.
of it was to do with that, because that's what people think. Like, if you're running and you're doing this, then you must have your life together, when actually everything else is falling apart, because that's the only thing you're thinking of.
It's so true. It's such a good point. Yeah, it's so beyond true.
Yeah. I think that's what a lot of the praise was about.
It's still like that now. I notice in like the community, in like our, in the day to day, it's like if you're the person that exercises and you're the person that eats a certain way, it's like, wow, you're so disciplined and you're amazing. And like, what else do you do? And how, what do you have, And it's like it's, that's just somebody's exercise and eating. Like, it's so not a part of them. But I think the identity piece also has layers to it, because when you don't live at home and you're a teenager, you're so much forming your identity. So like, that happens to kids in high school, that food becomes their identity, whether it's they're not eating or they're really strict with their eating or they're exercising, they're the healthy one. So it's like, and you couldn't make a career out of it, and now it's such a hot career that it makes sense that like people get branded like that,
Yeah, it was definitely a very big part of my identity for a long time.
Okay, so then walk us through how you shifted to the intuitive eating side.
Okay, so I kept up all of my rules and things pretty much during high school. I would binge on vegetables, so I didn't really care about that. It's like, okay, it's just vegetables. But then I went to seminary, and I started actually binging on things I'd never eaten in a very long time. I wasn't able to keep up my standards in seminary.
What do you think changed?
I wanted to focus on other things as well, I think. I wanted to focus on my studies. I wanted to focus on making friends. And I just realized I can't keep maintain this extreme diet. And also the food suddenly was different. I was used to a certain menu for 3 years that I learned how to work with. And now it was a completely new menu. And there was clearly, things that didn't align with my food rules going on in seminary. I just couldn't keep it up. I tried at the beginning and I just couldn't keep it up. I totally blame myself. I thought it was all my fault. I'd lost control. But I just couldn't, no matter how hard I tried. And I also got a little bit more perspective, thinking, I don't know if I want to go back there. It was a bit extreme. But I didn't know how to find a middle. Oh, I also think that my body was kind of done with me a little bit, because I was also started training for the Jerusalem Marathon and I was running a lot. And my body was just like, I need food, like, stop this. So I started binging. It's interesting because nobody knew at the time. No one. Like, I still had that healthy girl front. I was still like the healthy dietitian girl of seminary. Got a lot of praise for it there as well. But in between classes, I would sneak downstairs to whatever was left over from lunch and just binge on like all the horrible, like the worst food gets left over in seminary, obviously.
Absolutely.
And that's what I would just out of control eat. And I just felt like I couldn't stop. And every day I would wake up in the morning and say, today is going to be different. Like, today, I would wake up in the morning. When I was thinking about, like, I was thinking about this a little bit before getting on the interview, and I remembered, I haven't thought about it in so long. I would wake up in the morning with this pit of shame in my stomach every single morning, remembering what I'd eaten the day before. Like, I haven't felt that since, and I probably won't feel that unless I kill somebody again. Like, it was so, it was as if I had like woken up and remembered that I had done something so terrible, I was going to prison for my life. That's what it felt like every day. It's crazy. And but then I would say, no, today is going to be different. Today I'm gonna run the 6 miles and eat the tiny thing that I told myself I'm gonna eat, and I'm gonna just stick to what I'm just gonna stick to my plan. And then obviously every day it didn't end up working. Became more and more out of control. I gained weight, which was my biggest fear of my whole life. And again, this was all happening without anybody having any clue what was going on. No one, I didn't tell a soul.
And you weren't living at home, and
Yeah, I wasn't living at home.
was it
And
a hard transition, by the way, from seminary and from high school to seminary?
not so much, because I was living in the same country, and I was very familiar with Yerushalayim. That was my like Shabbat Chofshah kind of destination for 3 years. I loved the learning. The hardest part for me was actually, I mean, aside from the food struggles, was actually social. I did struggle to fit in socially. I found I was a bit beyond kind of the excitement of like just landing in Israel and figure, I was a bit beyond that, and also I was quite strict with, like, I had my bedtime so I can go on my run in the morning, so I didn't, socialize so much at night, and I think I missed out on a lot of opportunities there. So socially I struggled, and then definitely the food became a comfort in seminary, because I was very lonely. There were a lot of hard things, and then I would use the food to cope in that way as well. So it was a transition, but it wasn't too extreme in terms of maybe what others go through, leaving the country, leaving home for the first time, that kind of thing.
So then, so you were binging and you were probably feeling so shameful because for 3 years you had controlled, quote unquote, yourself and been so, quote unquote, good and disciplined. And then now all of a sudden you're binging. You must have felt like so out of control.
Like, out of control is the word. That's what I felt. Just completely out of control and ashamed and afraid. And so at the end of toward the end of the year, I was like, I can't keep doing this. There must be another way. I can't go back to what I used to be. I can't keep up with what I'm doing. And I had a Kindle in seminary. I used to read quite a lot. And I like looked up some books. I don't even remember what I typed in. But I first came across this book, which is kind of like one of those in between intuitive eating and dieting, like, do it, like, listen to your body and you get skinny. I don't even remember what it was
I
called.
guess? Okay, fine. I want to guess.
You can guess.
If I'm so smart, why can't I lose weight?
No.
No, that's a big one.
It was called actually something with the word skinny in it, like, think like a skinny person. Eat, something like that. I don't even remember. But it So it had a lot of definitely like, you'll get skinny from this promise. But it did speak about the difference between naturally intuitive eating people and the way they eat versus dieting. And it started to introduce this idea, and I got very excited. And then I started looking for more books. And the next book I stumbled upon was Intuitive Eating. I read Intuitive Eating. I was completely blown away. I felt like Mashiach had come. Like I was so excited. I was just like, it's not me. It's not me. It's not, it's nothing. I'm not broken. And then I read, I'm a big reader. So then I read Health at Every Size right after that. And so I kind of, yeah, I remember those first week or two feeling just so free, just so excited. Like there's another way that I never knew about, that there's another way. There was still that promise, like, okay, I'm also going to lose weight from this. You know, that's what you're holding on to at the beginning as well. But that's where that started. And I worked on it by myself for a long time, which for quite a few months, I really went all in. I was like, okay, no more food rules. I just, let's do this, which was definitely chaotic at the beginning because I wasn't working with anybody. But then I ended up being like, okay, I need help. I found a dietitian in South Africa. I had insurance there who was intuitive eating certified.
Cool.
And yeah, that's where it started.
So you went back to when you were back in Australia, or you did it over the phone? How were you able to meet with a dietitian?
So at the end of seminary, so at the end of seminary, I went back home to South Africa. I know South Africa and
Did
Australia
I
get,
say just say Australia? I meant to say South Africa.
yeah.
Sorry.
It's so funny how they're so far apart, but they're always lumped together. It's so funny.
Sorry.
No, no problem. So I went back to South Africa for the summer. And I was trying to explain to my mother my new way of eating. She was very confused, but I was just, yeah, I was definitely ve feeling very out of control, but also just being like, okay, this is gonna work. I'm gonna get through this. Listening to a lot of podcasts as well, you know, encouraging myself. And then I went back to Israel to Tzfas, for Shana Bet. And that's when I called my mother at the beginning of the year. I said, Ma, I need to see a dietitian. I found a dietitian. I want to see if she takes insurance. My mother was like, are you sure that's what you need right now, a dietitian? Like, aren't you like over this whole trying to lose weight? I was like, no, it's a different type of dietitian. Just trying to explain to her. She's like, okay. So when I was over the phone, it was virtual. But we worked together from Israel and her being in South Africa. It's the same time zone, so it's helpful.
Oh, got it. That's amazing. So that is where you really learned how to implement intuitive eating.
Yeah. It was a very kind of step by step because I threw myself all in. That's the interesting thing. I did that part already. Then it was almost like working backwards, like, okay, but how do we figure out how to do this in a sustainable, healthy way that doesn't feel out of control? Yeah.
I think that's this is like an important point to highlight on people's intuitive eating journey, that like it's definitely true that there's like a self path, like a self-motivated path to learn intuitive eating, read the book, get the workbook, listen to podcasts. But then there's like the implementation and the parts where you're like, am I still diet? Am I, is this diet culture? Is this gentle nutrition? Is this, and everybody's so different. Everything's so nuanced. And like, there's no right answers, but just having that like trained professional who's a good sounding board, who actually understands intuitive eating, is trained in intuitive eating. It's a totally different world. Not to say that you can't do it on your own, but when you feel stuck, that's usually like a good indicator of like reaching out for help.
There's no way I could have actually done it on my own. A lot of the work I ended up doing, interestingly, was learning how to like feel my feelings. Because I definitely suppressed those for many years. I was like, I'm not allowed to be scared. I'm not allowed to cry because, you know, I have to keep it together. I'm by myself. If I fall apart, there's no one here to catch me. So a lot of it, the work I did with her was actually learning how to just get in touch with my body, including my feelings as well. Very helpful.
I think that's where we see like the overlap of like intuitive eating, intuitive living, like just skills, life skills that we don't have. And it seems funny, like people are like, wait, aren't you a dietitian? You're not a therapist, you're not a life coach. But I'm like, I know, but these principles and these are life skills. Like the same way that we turn off our hunger cues, we turn off our emotional cues, and that affects us in similar ways. And like, you know, we could even numb on hunger, or we could use binging to not feel our feelings. So they are very intertwined.
I definitely feel like I grew up a lot that year that I focused on it. I just definitely became a better version of myself in a lot of areas, which Baruch Hashem, because I got engaged that year at the end of the year. So it was like really, I was just right at, I wasn't at the, I was really toward the end. You're not at the end of anything, but I was at a really good place with food by that time. And it was a huge bracha that I kept on telling my husband when we first got married, like, you don't know how lucky you are that I did this. I would have been a miserable wife. I'm constantly asking you if I'm skinny enough. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but okay.
So, would you say it took you about like a year or 6 months to like work through the principles with your coach?
Yeah, so it was about a year from when I read the book until I. Until I was really in a very healthy place that hasn't, that's only gotten better, but that hasn't ever like gone back. I worked with her for about probably 6 months. And also I did throw myself all in at the beginning, which not a lot of people do, and I don't even know if I would recommend it. But that probably sped things up because like I got over, I was like, I don't have any food rules. I'm gonna eat everything. I just went all into that. So maybe that sped things up.
I think that does speed it up, but some people, I'm not against trying that. I just think so many people are so afraid. And then there are people like you who are like, you just felt so stuck that it was like, well, I don't really have anything to lose because I'm binging anyways, you know?
Right. I was at rock bottom anyway. So I was like, okay, let's just go all in here.
And
Yeah.
you're an all-in type of person. So,
Right.
and the book resonated with you. So it just kind of like all the stars aligned.
Yeah.
But then you mentioned that you are an intuitive eating coach, right?
Yeah. So that's an interesting, it's been an interesting journey that. So I always wanted to, as you also, I wanted to be a dietitian. You know, for me, it was like if I'm thinking about food all the time, may as well make a career out of it. So I also had no idea what a dietitian was. I thought also I just get to be, I wanted to just be able to make people as healthy as I was, you know?
Of
So
course.
that was the whole high school. I'm like, for sure, I'm going to be a dietitian. And then I worked with this dietitian, but so I was like, okay, I'm for sure going to be a dietitian now, not for diets, but for intuitive eating. And then after that year, when I was looking into like, you know, what my career would be, I called up my aunt, who I'm, who you know, Miriam Sherpin.
Oh, she's your aunt, yeah.
Yeah, she's my mother's youngest sister,
Got it.
and she's an intuitive eating dietitian.
Right.
We both found intuitive eating like different, like not connected to each other. But I called her up and I was like, okay, I want to do this, but what does it look like to become a dietitian? And she told me it's like really hard.
Yeah, it's really
It's
hard.
no joke. Yeah, you have to be in college for a really long time. And so at first I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. But then I looked back at my, you know, I worked with a dietitian and we didn't use any of the dietitian things that she had learned we it was for me, it was intuitive eating coaching. That's what it was because I knew everything I needed, like everything you could know about health. I was obsessive with health. It wasn't about that. So I was like, okay, maybe I could do this without being a dietitian. So then I found this whole kind of coaching world, intuitive eating coaches, and I was like, okay, I can maybe I could do this without, you know, going to dietitian school. Because anyway, I don't really want to work with, you know, let's say people with diabetes or things like that that you need to know. So I right after I got married, I was very young, I went right into like the coaching world. So I got trained, an official like coaching training for 6 months. And then I got certified as an intuitive eating counselor. An interesting thing that happened, which I think is helpful for some people to know, if you're like further on in your journey, sometimes it feels like, okay, next step in your recovery is to help other people with this. But not everybody, that's not everybody's, you know, for some people it's like, I'm gonna recover from this so I can move on to the next thing in my
Yeah,
life.
100%.
So yeah, so for me, it almost became my new identity that I took on. You know, I'm still young and I was very young still. So my new identity was, oh, I'm gonna have a career in this. You know, I saw these people with these careers in, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna have a career and I'm gonna be a, you know, an entrepreneur with this, and I'm gonna build my business, and I'm gonna help people. And that became my new way of kind of beating myself up because I wasn't going fast enough. I wasn't being good enough. I mean, I was 20 years old, like, and they were telling me, I was doing this coaching training, like, okay, now go coach for 20 hours. I'm like, who, what? Like, and people used to say, yeah, it's imposter syndrome. And looking back, it's not imposter syndrome. It's just you're not qualified.
Right.
You need to grow up. Sometimes
Wow.
I think that's what imposter syndrome is.
Yeah.
So I jumped into it and I was very excited about it. But then I ended up actually working with people, which was great. And then I realized, like, I'm not that interested in this topic that I want to speak to people about it for like 7 hours a day for the rest of my life. I was like, wow.
Right.
Okay, and I didn't have like the dietitian aspect of being able to,
Yeah.
help people with different things,
Right.
and I was like, okay, this is beautiful and wonderful, but like I can't see myself doing this every day, this topic. And also, I went straight into, after I got married, teaching in a seminary, and going and like doing For Brain Gains in different seminaries workshops, and I loved that, working with girls who had recently left home and that age group. Really, really resonated with me. So I set up myself as an intuitive eating counselor for girls in seminary, but then I started realizing like there's so much going on when you first leave home, and there's so much going on in seminary, and I want to address all of that in some way and give resources for all the things that are going on, not just for the specific girls who are struggling with specific eating struggles
Right.
when they leave home. So I kind of took a break because I think when I was pregnant with my second daughter, I was like, okay, this isn't working. Like, there's something that's keeping me stuck with trying to build this business.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was. So I took a break and I ended up doing some work with myself, and just, I realized like, wow, this has become my new identity of like, I have to now be this successful intuitive eating coach, and in order to be worthy, instead of
Yeah.
I have to be skinny, I have to be something else. It's the same
Yeah.
thing.
Yep.
So it was this really cool realization. And I realized, yeah, I don't want to do it. I
Yeah.
don't want to do it. It was really
Yeah.
hard because I'd invested at that point probably 4 years into it.
Wow.
A lot of different trainings and putting myself out there and working with people. And I was like, yeah, no, I don't want to do this. And so I took a break and I just let myself be a little bit with the jobs I already had. There were enough of them, the teaching and the kids. And I was like, okay, I'm going to wait for something to come. And then slowly this idea of the podcast and just creating some sort of resource for girls who have left home that's more sort of all-encompassing and gets to the root of things more, came up. And I was very excited about that, and I still am. And that's how the podcast came about. And I'm still going to seminaries, doing workshops on different topics. I speak about health, and I love to speak about, the impact that leaving home, eating, intuitive eating, all that has. But for me, it's more like one piece within a bigger picture.
Okay, wow, that's really interesting. Interesting perspective to bring because you could really like something and it could change your life, and you don't have to teach it. You don't have to experience it with other people. So I think that's an important point to make. And also, I will just validate the experience of like sometimes I love being an intuitive eating counselor and a dietitian, and I could talk about food all day. I just really love food. I think it's fascinating. But I understand that there are times when I'm like, I just want to sit down and have a meal and not think like, is this intuitive? Am I hungry? Am I full? Da-da-da. The color? What did I eat before? Like it's, or like, I just don't want people to ask me. Like, what? Well, I think I had this over succus where someone's like, could I ask you a question? Like one of my family members. And I was like,
I
and
just
she's
want to
like,
eat
you
my
don't
food.
really look like you want me to ask you a question. I'm like, I kind of just want to sit here and hang out and not counsel you on your kid, which she was like totally open and fine with. But it's just like one of those things you can't really like separate because food is so much a part of people's lives. So it becomes like every day, multiple times a day when you're eating, that could become obsessive, especially if you already have an obsessive personality that you no longer use with food, but you've transferred it. So that's why it's really important. Like you said, even though you got rid of the worthiness connected to your food, now it's connected to your business. And like the root of the issue doesn't go away unless you work on the actual issue.
Right. And at some point, for many people, once you get into this for long enough, into intuitive eating, food just becomes food. Like,
Right.
it's not exciting enough that you want to work with people on their food. It's just
Right.
food.
Right.
And that's
I
a
always say,
great place to get to.
yeah, that's what I always say. I want you to eat, I want you to enjoy, and I want you to move on. Those are like my goals. I mean, I love talking about people's food, so that everyone's different,
That's good.
Yeah, I had the same experience, though, when I felt like before I learned about intuitive eating, I was like, I spent all this year, these years in school, the money in school and investment in school. And like, I'm like, now what? But intuitive eating was, thank God I found intuitive eating and I work with it. But I wanted to also tell you, just if this is comforting at all, that like, so you're saying like the eating issue is like the big, is like a small piece of like a bigger scenario of like leaving home. And because you're trained in it, I still think you're going to use it. Like you might not talk to people every day about their food, but because you have that training behind you, I think it's going to come in handy for you.
Yeah, it already has. It already
Yeah.
has. I got,
Yeah.
even this week, I'm doing another kind of workshop. I'm going to bring it in. It's extremely helpful.
Yeah.
And to be able to learn, to know how to talk about it, and to know that when I'm addressing it, I'm not going to be like almost everyone else who goes to seminaries and says all the same stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just make sure you're eating your carbs and you're like,
Yeah.
you're eating the right proportions of things and
Complex
don't eat
carbs,
this. And
complex carbs.
yeah, and
Only
like.
complex carbs, right?
Yeah, so I'm glad I'm able to come with a more nuanced perspective. It's very helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Could you share with us a little bit about like the diet culture in seminaries? Is it like as bad as we think? Is it getting better? Is intuitive eating getting in there? What do you think?
I think that it is getting in there. It is. And there's awareness also starting from staff as well. I remember I wanted to this year go back to speak in the seminary I had been in. About health and so the head of the seminary said, she's like, firstly, as long as you don't make them come knocking down my door, making me try and change the menu, then
Totally.
that's good because we're not changing the menu.
Yeah,
And also
I
she
was
was
that
saying,
girl
yeah,
in
you're
seminary.
that girl. It never works. They don't change the menu. They're not going to
Yeah.
change the menu for you. Just
Yes.
putting it out there.
Yeah.
And she also said, like, yeah, maybe you can give a perspective where people can be more just less obsessive about it, which was big
Yeah.
coming from them. I think
Yes.
that staff members are starting to see it, and I do think that I do think so. But at the same time, this desire and this pressure to be skinny,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't think that's going away anytime soon. We have a lot of work there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just I guess just to end, what's some advice that you could give to anyone listening, a mom, a young girl away from home, seminary girls, a mom of a seminary girl, how could we, even like on a very small scale, how could we slowly but consistently try to change that narrative of like the thin ideal and the obsession with even quote unquote health, like the obsession with like you don't want to send your daughter to seminary because she's going to gain weight and it's not healthy and blah, 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 blah. Like, what could we as a community do?
So I'll start first on an individual level. I think we take for granted how many messages we've been given over and over again for the mentality that we're trying to change, which is, the dieting mentality.
Yeah.
That you're only worthy if you're skinny and you're only put together if you're eating a certain way. And all of those messages, we've heard them so many times. So if you want to change that, you need to give yourself new messages. Like you can't just expect yourself to
Right.
like once hear about intuitive eating and be like, okay, I'm going to believe that now.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, one of the biggest things that helped me was actually listening to podcasts, where people just shared their experience. I'm pretty
Yeah.
sure it was Christy Harrison's podcast. I'm sure you're familiar.
Course, yeah.
I listened to all of her episodes, and that was probably the biggest part of my healing because it just, it sends these new messages very subtly, very
Yes.
slowly,
Yeah.
and it really helps to shift your perspective and also to just hear from other people who are going through the
Yeah,
same thing
totally.
that, yeah, you're not broken. Your
Yeah.
body's doing exactly what it should be doing.
Yeah.
I think we need to remind ourselves that also for our kids, like we have to give, there's going to be a lot of messages going in from a different perspective. We need to make sure that they're hearing the perspective we want them to hear. We need to make sure we're hearing the perspective we want to hear all the time because we've heard the other perspective our whole lives.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big one. And, finding a community where you can do that or listening to podcasts, however, that works for you. On a community level, that's a big one on a community level. I mean, I think that a lot. Something that was really eye-opening for me was this experience I had after the eating, which was with the business, which really came down to this feeling that if I don't have this thing going for me or that thing going for me, I'm not worthy. And I have to kind of earn my space in this world. And it's such a non-Jewish concept. I mean, we're the ones who speak about neshama all the time and how the neshama is perfect. And so maybe when we, you know, this messaging of the neshama that we instill in kids from this youngest age, we should maybe mean it a little bit more, you know, like mean it for ourselves. You're actually worthy. You don't have to look a certain way or do a certain thing to earn your space in this world. So if we can maybe change that messaging, because I think that that's at the root of a lot of it. I mean, at least it's just not feeling enough. I'm not enough. I'm not. And if we can instill that in ourselves and in others, I think a lot of problems will go away. But one of those would definitely be this one.
I think that just to go from like the individual to the community, like the same message that you gave in terms of like changing those neural pathways and not just eliminating a belief system, but putting a new one in. I think it's communal as well. Like we used to have, you know, speakers talk about health and weight loss, and now we need to change the narrative and continue to change the narrative and speak to the parents and speak to the kids and be consistent with like, with like how the times have changed and what research has shown and how much of the information that was being put out was just really detrimental and toxic and causing eating disorders. And now that we have professionals and people who ha actually have evidence-based research that all that talk causes eating disorders and way worse eating problems than you would ever know, like continue to spread that message is really important, and which is what you're doing. Okay, so is there anything else you want to share with the listeners? Do you want to leave an email address that people could contact you? Are you taking individual clients now in terms of coaching? Like, is there anything else that you would want to share?
Yeah, so right now I'm not doing individual coaching, but I'm building up the podcast. So if anyone is living away from home or has a kid or a relative who has is living away from home, I also if they're in high school, away from home or after seminary, you're still on your own after seminary as well. Yeah, to check out the podcast. It's called On Your Own, Esther Shemtov. And to subscribe.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, this you know, Gila's episode is coming out tomorrow. I'm so excited. So
I'm
go
so
check it out.
excited. That was a really fun episode.
It was I had so much fun listening to it again. It was great. So that would definitely be one. And yeah, on your own podcast at gmail.com, you can contact me. On your own podcast is the Instagram, and on your own podcast is the podcast. So go check it out.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. It was amazing.
Thanks for having me. I
Of
really enjoyed.
course. Thank you all so much for being here on my podcast, Get Into It with Gila. If you'd like to learn more about what I do and what intuitive eating is, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com or follow me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. Thank you so much. Have a great day.